It's episode 160 of the Hodgepodge Podcast. I'm your host, Doug. We're going to talk about a hodgepodge of topics from music, movies, TV, theater, and other pop culture events. And on this episode, I'm joined by the director and cast of Stageworks' production of Agatha Christie's And Then There Were None. You can reach us at thehodgepodgepodcast at gmail.com or over on our website, thehodgepodgepodcast.com, or look for us on iTunes and YouTube and subscribe. Or head on over to Facebook, search for the Hodgepodge Podcast, and like our page. And as promised on the last episode, I am joined by my castmates and director of Stageworks' production of Agatha Christie's And Then There Were None. And basically we're going to give the listeners an overview of everybody who's gathered here. The whole cast isn't here. They couldn't make it because we're getting an epic dusting of snow tonight.
Something that can almost be measured.
Yeah. And everyone's busy buying bread, milk, and eggs.
Right. That's right. And, so we'll just get to know everybody and talk a little bit about the show and plug. plug. Let's start. That comes later. We will start with, thank you. We will start, to my immediate left, and, we'll go around and, introduce yourselves at one at a time, and then, and who you play in the show or what your role is in the production.
Okay, I'm Mia Peters, and I am the director of the show.
So you play the adult.
well,
sort of. No, not so much. That would be Taylor, the assistant director, who plays the adult.
I am Michael Parker, and I play Captain Philip Lombard.
I'm Noelle Barnard Azzarello, and I play Vera Claythorne.
I am Carla Reck, and I am playing Dr. Armstrong, but a female Dr. Armstrong.
That's right.
I'm Laura Arwood. And I am playing Miss Emily Brandt.
Don't forget the Miss.
I'm Chris McBennett, and I play Marston, Anthony Marston.
I'm Jason Christ, and I play Thomas Rogers, the butler.
I know you. You've been on this show before.
Yes, I have. Back by popular demand of, I'll get a list.
Two people.
Yeah, at least.
And of course, I'm the host, you know me, and I'm playing Blore, William Henry Blore, the worst name ever.
As in, don't let the Blore hit you on the way out.
Exactly. So I guess we'll, I prepared some questions that we can do, or if you guys just want to, you know, chit-chat, whatever, to promote the show.
Dangerous offer.
I know. I guess maybe you want to, Mia, we want to give a brief summary of the show. And
oh, I think you do it so well. I don't need to. In fact, you could just play that, right? You could just splice it right in. But ultimately, what it is the book that Agatha Christie wrote, And Then There Were None, was doing so well that West End producers came to her and asked her to turn the book into a play in 1930, late 37, early 38. And so she did, and this is her highest-selling book that she wrote, and it's one of her best plays as well. So it is roughly 10-ish strangers are invited to a house party on an island, and they start dropping like flies, and it's got to be somebody, so there you go.
Okay. And what drew you to want to direct this show?
Well, I am a huge Agatha Christie fan. When I was little and everybody else was reading Nancy Drew's and The Babysitter's Club, I was reading Agatha Christie and Stephen King. So when the opportunity came, well, you know, when the opportunity came up for me as a Stageworks board member to direct a show, I took it because this is my favorite book of all time. I really just didn't want somebody else to fuck it up. somebody's going to do that, it might as well be me.
That'll go on the poster. I didn't want anyone else to fuck it up. Mia Peters.
Well, it's a true story. So, there we go. That is exactly where we came.
That's actually the same thing that Denis Villeneuve said about the new Blade Runner movie. He said, I didn't want anybody else to fuck it up, so that's why I decided to do it.
Wow.
So everybody else, what drew you to this particular show? We'll start with you, Mike.
He was begged extensively by yours truly via his wife.
I actually was not a big fan of doing mysteries on stage. And I had talked to my wife, and my wife talked to me, and told me that you need to go audition. So I did not have anything planned, so I went. And I am so glad that I did. I am thoroughly enjoying this process. I'm loving working with Mia again, as well as everyone else in the cast. It's been a really good experience for me so far.
Great. Noelle?
I also am a huge Agatha Christie fan, and I have wanted to do this show and do this role for more years than I should probably admit, because that's probably more years than I admit to being alive.
Really, neither of you were that big.
Carla?
Yes, I'm new to the area 3 years ago, and I've performed with Mia before, and I've seen most of these folks on stage, so I'm very lucky to be in this cast. But it's acknowledged as one of her best plays. I did two Agatha Christie's in Pennsylvania when I was there, and I had a blast doing them. So it's nice to have the opportunity to work with this cast, and it was nice to see everybody turning out for this. I think we got a really good mix of folks here. But pleasure to be on stage with them.
Laura?
I, too, am a large Agatha Christie fan. In fact, I really enjoyed working with this cast. In fact, four of us were last year in another Agatha Christie play. We were in Mousetrap together.
Michael says he doesn't like murder mysteries.
I know. Michael, you were holding out.
I've decided to do them exclusively until I like
that was part of the number.
Yeah. Was that on your audition sheet? I am here under protest.
This is going public, so I'm not saying anything.
I would like to be cast with that theater group again. Therefore, it was a fabulous experience. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then there were not a comedy by Agatha Christie.
So Noelle and Michael and I and Gus Allen, who's not here, were all in Mousetrap together, but also Karen Morgan, who isn't here. I was with her in a play, Silver Linings, right now, and she's just a hoot and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was like, oh, I know I'll like half the cast, you know. And then I've just been delightfully surprised at the rest of them.
And of course, your career goal is to play exclusively bitchy British ladies.
That's right. Old bitchy British ladies. Yeah, this was the trifecta. This is like the third one in the past year that I've done, and I'm looking forward to this finale because I'll finally get to dye my hair again and quit looking my age.
You know? Anyway. I'm not holding you to gray hair.
Well, I sort of do. You okay. Know? And so.
Do you feel you're getting typecast?
I hope so. I was like, I want all of the old cranky British ladies in Wake County to be mine. So,
and what's to be fair is she almost didn't get that role. She came very close to having a very, very different role. Mm. It was a last minute, everybody else was gone from the callbacks. And someone said, hey, can I read for this particular role? And my answer to that is always sure. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, go for it.
And to be fair, what she said to him, because I was present at this, you know, super secret extra double callback, was, damn you, I had already cast most of the play.
Did that happen with Gus as well?
She's not saying names over there.
Well, actually, the role that you were alluding to, I got to read initially for that role because I made a joke. Because I was auditioning and walking away, and you said, is there any other role you would like to audition for? And I don't know if I'm allowed to say.
Sure.
And I said, laughing, ha-ha, I'd like to read for the judge, which is typically an old, cranky British man. Mm. And she said, okay, just put your stuff down and wait. And I almost jaw dropped because I didn't know Mia, and that was fun. You know, and I would tell you, you probably should put always go with jokes, because that was the most fun audition.
You know, and I might be jumping the gun on this one, but from the get-go, I had always planned on casting Wargrave as a woman.
Mm.
And so
make Gus
to
do it and
cast to cast Gus, I mean, it really was a damn you moment, because that had, from the moment I knew that I was going to do this show, the plan was always to have Wargrave as a woman. Mm-hmm. And so it was at that moment, and it's not that clearly if a man came in was better at the role, then they were going to get cast it, but the intention was for it always to be a woman. Mm-hmm. And to go more a psychological side of it, which he is masterful at. So I'm really excited about having cast him as the judge. But it was... He wrecked my dreams is what he did. He wrecked my dreams.
Your progressive dreams. Chris?
I'm actually also in the show because of Michael's aforementioned wife, because I saw that she had clicked going on the Facebook event, and we were just coming out of Romeo and Juliet, mm-hmm. which we were all in together, and I needed something else for January, because I'm just sort of, I'm trying to get into community theater a little more, because this is actually only my third show, mm-hmm. Outside of my university program. Right. So I saw that she was going, and I was like, all right, sure. And then I checked the cast list, and I was thinking, all right, the rehearsal period is going to fall on top of Gift of the Magi at Sonoris.
Right.
So I was thinking, all right, I can't play anything that's not anything that's big, because they'll need me there every, like, often,
right.
all the time. And I saw that Anthony, Mr. Marston, was
was not in as many scenes as some other characters.
Exactly.
I would be more flexible with that rehearsal schedule.
Yeah.
And there were so many other of our cast members in...
That's true.
Magi.
It was nice to be in Magi with Karen and Gus as well, and just have that like overlap and having that work out. But I didn't think I was really going to have much of a shot at being in this, but I was pleasantly surprised. So,
to be clear, I think we're going to give Laura a page in the program. Thank you, Laura, for bringing all of these people and for helping with the costumes.
And Christ.
Yes. Well, Mia blew a dart into my jugular and I woke up in a tux.
Yeah, you were another one of my big begs.
Not really. I'd never been in a play, and I was at Comedy Works because I do some improv. And
do you?
You were having a conversation with Michelle.
Yes, I came strategically that night to see, to see Michelle and support Michelle. Because I love her, but also with the intention of begging you so to come and audition.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was a thing. So,
yeah, so that's always flattering to be asked to audition, because I might not have done it on my own. I've been afraid to do it for a while, but now's a good time. Why not? And it can't be this easy and fun every time, so... If I do another play, I don't know what to expect.
Yes, I have spoiled you rotten.
The whole cast has spoiled me rotten. This is a lot of fun, and very much enjoying it.
Aww.
So do I owe Michelle a thank you for you as well? Or were you coming on your own?
No, yeah, sort of. Because I saw, because I'm friends with Michelle and obviously friends with Jason, and I saw
what?
Them. Yes, I have friends. And I saw... I saw that they had put in they were going to do the Facebook thing, and it's like, oh, your friends, you might be interested in that your friends are going, and
Facebook's so creepy.
It is, and I hadn't done a show. We were discussing before we started recording. I haven't done a show since college, and just because timing was never right, you know, and my job's a pain in the ass. So
adulting.
Yeah, adulting, basically. So
adultery.
Yes, adultery. So I saw that the time was, you know, was going to work. So I was like, all right, I'll go for this. Why not? And
All right, so apparently she's going to have to split the page with Michelle.
Sounds like some of us fell backwards into this.
Yes. Yes.
Well, depending on... Karen actually brought me, so...
You know, we have a... Karen and I have done shows together. Carla and I have done shows together.
Mm-hmm. We did one?
We've done show. Yeah, actually, the first show that I have that I had done... Oh, no, I guess that was my second show that I had done since college, mm-hmm. was with Michael. So it's a very... For being as many theaters as there are in this area and as much community theater as there is in this area, it's such a tight-knit group. And we all run into mm-hmm. each other again and again. Because at Comedy Works, you work with Gus. And yeah. I've been in many shows with Michelle. And I've done shows with Laura. And so... And there were other people in Romeo and Juliet that I've done shows with, so it kind of...
And how many of us were in bar plays along with Michelle and Gus? No, Gus wasn't in, but he
and
was.
And I've done several shows with Michelle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
So basically it's a very small world and your reputation will precede you.
Yeah.
Yeah, play nice. Yeah.
Be very nice.
Yeah. And I do the podcast with Dirty A and Matt, so people you don't know, so it's great.
You son of a bitch.
You dumb son of a bitch. How did, this is a question for everybody, how did you get involved in theater to start? For some of us, I'm sure it's long in the annals of time.
I tried out for the Wiz senior year of high school, and I tried out for the Scarecrow, and I didn't get it. Someone else who had more experience got it, which is fine. Right. He'd done plays his right. whole career. But I also tried out for volleyball, and I got a starting position in volleyball, so I took that instead of... I was given gatekeeper to the Emerald City, and then turned it down to do volleyball.
Right.
I wish I hadn't. I would rather have done a lot of theater, but I still play volleyball, so...
We did
a loss.
We did the Wiz in my high school, too, which was odd. It was an odd choice.
It is easier to put together a pickup game of volleyball than and sure. put a bunch of people together and say, hey, let's do a show.
Yeah.
Do not you here. Have
tonight. Let's right now.
Do you have a silver funnel you could wear on your head?
Yeah.
No? That's weird.
I don't know. Maybe pickup theater should be a new trend.
Yes.
Let's just do a play tonight.
Isn't that called a flash mob? Isn't that the pickup theater, basically?
That would be dance.
I guess, yeah.
Isn't Shakespeare in the Park impromptu?
Depends.
So I got into theater in high school as an escape mechanism. My situation was not great, so it was fantastic for me to be able to be someone else, literally step into someone else's shoes. And I already did a lot of music. I went to performing arts magnet school. So the step into theater wasn't far, and I absolutely fell in love. And then adulting came around, and, you know, kids and life and groceries and stuff like that took over. So, but it was great to get back in. And there is a Reader's Theater group that's here in Holly Springs that actually StageWorks now sort of manages. And it's a great way back into theater if you aren't comfortable with memorizing lines. So that was my first show back in 18 years, I think, was that. And we did War of the Worlds,
nice.
Which we had done a radio version of when I was in the fifth grade. So it was a kind of cool thing of coming back in.
Can we do that for this show? The reading?
The theater? Reader's Theater? No, but plug. We do have a Reader's Theater show that we will be auditioning folks for in February that is a spoof on the old radio shows, which is really cool. It's a local writer who's been in a couple shows. Actually, he auditioned for this show as well. It's really, really, it's hilarious. And they're fun to do. But it's a great way to get back in. It's really low-key because you don't have to memorize anything. You just have to become really, really familiar with what you're talking about. So that was me. That's how I got here.
honestly, I have wanted to act since I was 5. Mm-hmm. I spent 9 years in Los Angeles pursuing an acting career, far too passively to actually be successful. So... I did eventually decide to give it up, and that was a very difficult and somewhat traumatic decision. Mm-hmm. I moved out here about a year, within a year, and about 10 years later, my lovely bride signed me up to audition for a show because she got tired of watching me talk to her college students in the theater programs there and watching my eyes light up when I talked about my experiences on stage and not doing it. So I was like, no, you're doing this. So she signed me up to audition for NC State's Theater Fest in 13, and I have been back on stage more often than not, it seems like, ever since then.
Yeah, she never sees you.
Her plan the whole time. Yes.
He needs to get the hell out of this house.
Well, I started doing ballet when I was 5, and so that was pretty much it. I did my first, you know, real play was You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. I was Snoopy when I was 11.
She was adorable.
I was adorable. It's my profile picture right now. Now someone's going to be stalking me on Facebook.
Don't worry. We don't have any listeners.
You should change it to a picture that says, stop stalking me.
So I pretty much haven't looked back since then.
Well, I was did a couple skits in grade school, and then I basically had my butt in theater seats for the next 30 years. My parents had subscriptions to different community theaters in Pennsylvania, and when I was 35, I was getting a divorce, and I was working with a bunch of poets and writers, and amongst the group were a bunch of playwrights who would have me table read with them and said, why don't you audition for the play? And I'm like, nah. And then from that same group, I met my now cool partner, who at some point he'd done acting, and he said, why don't we do a show together? So we actually auditioned for a show kind of as a duo, and it was Lovers and Other Strangers, and we kind of went in with the particular piece we wanted to do and perform that. So my first time on stage was doing a romantic scene with my real-life romantic partner, and I have not looked back either. I try to do one or two shows a year, and it's great to move here. It's a very welcoming place. When you move after 10 years of doing theater in another area and you come here, no one knows you, and there's so many good people that are auditioning. It was nice to feel so welcome and get back into the game really quick, so it's very appreciative of that.
I got in, it's Laura, I got into theater in college. I followed Nicola Leffler, who many of y'all know, over to Thompson Theater at NC State. We had been on the fencing team, and after 2 years, we got tired of running 3 miles a day. So she walked over to audition, actually, and you can't take it with you. Mm-hmm. I followed her. She got the lead, and I got cast as the Russian Grand Duchess, which is where I got that accent. The first time I met Noelle, I was trying to do a Hispanic accent, and it kept coming out.
Pony in the stable.
She's my first pony in the stable. Yeah, I was trying to...
A pony.
Yeah, I was like, you know, freelancing a madam. I was trying to do her Hispanic, but she kept coming out Russian. So, you know, anyway, she had a very interesting ethnic background. But anyway, so, and that's also where I met Kurt Benrud. So all of us were in theater together, those many years ago at NC State. And then I left the area for about 25 years and then came back about 5 years ago. Mostly been doing playwriting, and was so happy that Carla was in one of my plays a couple years ago. And
that was fun.
Yeah, I had nothing to do with it. I just lucked out. And so that was she was in one of my bar plays. But this past year, for some reason, I've done more acting of old cranky.
It's a good thing, too. Your British accent is better than your Hispanic one.
It really is not very...
I didn't start that long ago, honestly. I think my first play was, like... I didn't really start acting seriously that long ago. My first play was in kindergarten, and it was a fairy tale sort of thing. And I had the lead, but I can't remember anything... I can't remember the title at all.
So it didn't change your life?
It didn't. At all. I stepped on stage every once in a while over the few years after that, and people would tell me, you should do that more. Like, I'd be like, nah, I don't have that kind of self-confidence. What are you talking about? And then I just took I needed a gen ed art cred. My freshman year of college, I was just trying to get all of the classes I didn't want to take out of the way. And I took, I figured theater was better than some sort of elaborate kind of design. Because NC State doesn't exactly offer, like, let's do pottery, y'all. Let's do painting.
Origami.
Yeah, right. It's just, we're the one and done's. But I ended up taking just an intro to theater. Everyone in the theater department thinks it's the boring class because you actually have to learn things as opposed to just sort of doing whatever you want. But I loved it. And I started the minor.
As someone with a theater degree, I'm really offended.
Well, it's just none of the others really require desks at all.
Wow. But, I'm feeling so attacked right now.
Breathe, Noelle, breathe.
This is going to get real dramatic.
There might be a real murder here.
Now a dramatic
here.
Reading.
Breathe.
The script out of the way. Lost in the scuffle.
Yeah, I just started doing the theater minor, and then it kind of took over everything else I was doing in college. And I stopped doing my major almost completely to finish the minor while I was doing that. So,
there's a happy ending, Noelle. See, there's a good.
I don't know. He still says that there's only one theater class that requires actually learning.
I think that was the only one you had to buy a book for, and that was just sort of a downer.
Oh gosh.
Breathe, Noelle. Breathe.
Okay.
It's a small department. We don't have.
You were at NC State, right?
Yeah.
He was taking theater at an ag school.
I understand. Okay. I understand.
Didn't offer theater major there.
I understand.
That's what I picture.
Only one theater and class you actually is have that to where learn your wife in works? Instead of just doing whatever you want.
Is that where your wife works?
Yes.
She's the costume goddess there. Yes.
And she really is.
Yes.
She really is.
Yeah. I do kind of picture the title.
I do kind of picture the theater department at NC State being just a closet in the corner.
Oh, no.
It is there.
That was my closet 30 years ago.
No, I'm going to tell you.
I love that closet.
When I get to go and become one with the costume
the
closet. Oh. Oh, God, no. But it is every Star Wars. It's like the Star Wars nerd. She opens the door to the costumes. And as someone who does a lot of costuming, it's like, the lights and the angels start singing and the heavens. Oh, it's a beautiful place.
And you're in Narnia.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I wish my costume from She Stoops to Conquer was still there. It was beautiful. They've always made good costumes there.
Most of them made by Laura.
We should probably specify, not the same Laura you've been hearing.
Oh, no, I can't sew worth crap.
You can knit like crazy.
Yes.
She's been knitting this whole time.
She's been knitting since October.
She has been knitting through every rehearsal and at home. And
no, actually, that has to do with what you were talking about, getting familiar with your props. Mm-hmm. Because my character knits during the show, and even though I do knit, I have to be able to knit on stage without looking at what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I have to be able to glare at the rest of you.
And know your lines and all that stuff. Yeah.
Well, and not take all your attention.
Well, I mean, still. I mean, it's...
Yeah. Yeah. No, yeah. So that's one of the reasons why I do it.
Right.
And you're not doing anything that needs to be counted. And
oh, please, no. It's straight garter stitch.
Yeah. So,
see, acting requires learning.
You leave that kid alone.
You are going to get so much shit.
So,
it's just started.
I have a question, though.
Yeah.
Do you knit the British way versus the American way?
Or
is that something I need to teach you between now and then? Because I don't teach at all. I knit the British way.
I actually didn't even know there were different kinds. I actually recently learned there's a Norwegian way.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know. You can teach me British. I'd be happy to learn.
It's easier to knit without looking because you... well, this is going to be super boring to everyone else. But
we'll talk later.
Including my listeners.
we'll talk later.
Now that you spent 2 months building muscle memory.
Right.
Yeah. I could just teach you something else in a week.
Yeah. No.
Now that you've been doing a rehearsal for the last 3 months, let's change everything.
That's one of those little things that you don't want us to get too settled into our routine.
No,
do it
in
British.
It's one of
now.
Those authenticity things where... There are some people who would notice that.
It's a detail.
It's a detail people
God knows I am detail-oriented.
Yeah.
So. I'm trying to be, as the butler wiping chairs down.
It's like, I really don't think that you would be wiping that
there's nothing else
velveteen
to do.
Chair down, but okay.
Well, there's nobody else there.
There could be dust.
Do we have a feather duster for him?
I just got to find other stuff.
Only
to
if
do.
He wears the apron and the bow tie and the feather duster, and that's it.
So, what did you learn to theater, Jason?
We're selling some tickets now. That's it.
Oh, just the apron. Yeah.
It's radio. They don't know what he looks like. So,
it's been a running joke from the get-go.
And picture, a dream for some of us.
Who's the new Aquaman?
Jason Momoa?
Yeah. Jason Momoa.
Picture him, and that's not me.
So, what drew you to theater and acting and all this stuff?
Mia.
Yay!
Well, this show.
Like
yeah.
a magnet.
But,
I have wanted to do it
right.
for a while. And, of course, I was way too shy in my younger years. I really didn't do anything that required you to be outgoing until I was like 35 when I started doing. I just offhand tried to do I took a demo class mm-hmm. that you've taken as well.
I've taken that class.
It's just a one-night class for improv. And I decided to sign up for the full class. And then they invited me to the next intermediate level class. And they invited me to be in the show and then to be a Comedy Works resident. So that's made me want to do more things. I took a few stand-up comedy classes at Charlie Goodnight's. And so, obviously, getting in a play is the next step, of course. Well, and I've also been sort of, like you and Dirty A are, when we were kids, sponges for what you see on TV.
Yeah.
Just memorizing scenes randomly from shows. And I've always been a sponge of people's different accents and voices and characters and how people react, and that's what I'm sure most of us draw on to a degree, how you've seen it done before, or if you're directing someone, have you seen X or Y do this, do it, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Hey, do you have a favorite memorized line?
From my childhood?
Show, yeah.
Actually, today I just ramble off because a coworker of mine has the Knight Rider theme as his ringtone, and he often leaves his cell phone out at his desk, so it just goes when he's not there. So I'm over at my desk going, "Knight Rider, a shadowy flight into the dangerous world of a man who does not exist."
Wow. This will not be in our Agatha Christie show, but that was good.
It will not be.
Yeah, my parents would make me do, because I would memorize bits from movies and stuff like that, movies that my dad probably shouldn't have let me watch, like The Blues Brothers.
What's wrong with Blues Brothers?
It's rated R, and I was four, I think, when I watched it. And the one that, like, I would do Eddie Murphy from Beverly Hills Cop, and my mom would make me do it for their dinner guests and stuff like that.
Aww.
But the one that sticks out to me, and it's not even something that I remember, it's something that has been told to me because I was so young, that my dad got a Laserdisc player. That's how old this is. Laserdisc. Blues Brothers. My mom's like, "What? Don't what? You can't let him watch that." He's like, "He just watches it with car crashes. Come on, car check. Come on." Apparently, he and I are driving in the car together one day, and I just blurt out, "No fucking way!" And he goes, "What did you just say?" I, "No fucking way!" Like Jake and the Blues Brothers. So he laughed so hard he had to pull off the road. And goes home and tells my mom. She goes, "I told you he was going to start saying those bad words." Ah, da, da.
That's so. Where you pull out. You all right? I learned it by watching you.
But as far as acting, I got into it in high school. My friend was a stage manager. They did The Man Who Came to Dinner my junior year. And he said, "You got to try it for the show because this guy is you." He's sarcastic, and he's a sarcastic asshole. He's you. And I was like, "All right." I said, "Is it the lead?" And he's like, "Yeah." And I said, "All right, fine. I'll try out for that." And I went in, and I wasn't nervous. I just went up and did it, and then they called me back, and then I got nervous. And then I got the part, and the guy who was a senior ahead of me, who just assumed he was going to get it, hated me pretty much for the rest of my life. Because I just went, "Thank you." And he's like, and that show was a lot of fun. And then I did it in college, and like Chris, I got involved with a non theater for non-theater majors group, And it basically consumed my life in college. I was the president. I was the vice president one time. Just ran the thing. It was fun. Made a lot of great friends there.
Wow. I actually want to go back to something Jason was saying about sort of his approach with acting. It seems like that's a very external, you know, that it's about like seeing external things. And you know, for me, it's the complete opposite. For me, everything comes from a very internal place of, you know, knowing what's this person's motivations and why are they doing what they're doing and what are they trying to achieve. And it's all very internal as opposed to starting from an external place. I think that's just kind of a really interesting contrast.
I think that has happened to me during our rehearsals, because I had a vision of who I wanted to sort of do an impression of. I don't know his name. You might know if I describe him to you, but it's become someone totally different based on the way we interact with each other and with Karen, and it's just it's a new character. And yeah, you do end up defining for yourself who the character is.
Yeah, I mean, you know, throughout this, especially, I know Michael works very similarly to me in really wanting to understand motivations and relationships and things. And he and I have literally, like, discussed pretty much everything that happens, because we're all trapped in a house, you know, together. Spoiler alert. So we know every, like, we have, like, talked about pretty much every conversation our characters have had that happens off stage.
I'm basically writing out, I got the Chrissy fan.
you know what's... So for me, theater, particularly from this side of it, from the directing versus acting in it, but it is what consumes me as an actor, is the relationships, the psychology behind. In fact, in college, I had my minor was psych, and I had a professor in the abnormal psychology class, and that's what we did, was we took books. And we had to read the books and then do the psych profiles for the characters. And it was amazing. And so whenever I read a book or whenever I do these shows, that's part of it for me, is the relationship and every interaction, which is why I'm so anal retentive with you guys about the interactions with each other and where it's coming from and how do you feel about this person, what did you do, and all of those, you know, questions that I barrage you with repeatedly, is because to me that is the most important part of the story, is the relationships. And in this one, it's so different from most shows, because most shows you're building these long going relationships that
most
have been
shows
running
you
with
know
people.
Some of the people in the show with you.
Exactly. And this one, what's difficult is we've been in rehearsals for so long, and many of you know each other from your regular lives, but I need you to be complete strangers when you walk in to the room, and you can't recognize each other, and that's, it's hard. I think it's almost harder than trying to pretend to develop or to develop relationships over time, is to keep it fresh and keep it so that we don't know each other. And Nicole and I had quite an interesting speculation
Nicole?
Last night.
Yeah, what you mean Noah?
There's mint tea. This is not bourbon.
As if you don't know her.
I am so sorry. I don't even know where that came from.
Exactly.
Noelle and I had a conversation last night about, well, maybe they did. Maybe they weren't as strangery as we initially thought. So,
what?
The canoodlers, yes, that's that is.
Well, that's very interesting for whoever is listening and has never seen. And
that's why they need to come to the show to figure out where our vegan comes from.
Yes.
Is there canoodling in this show somewhere?
Is there?
I don't know.
Actually, I think that came from Bruce. I swear there was some note they were talking about you. I heard somebody say something about you two canoodling.
Oh, we were being sarcastic.
Yeah. No. And it was some blocking that y'all had done, and they mentioned canoodling, and it just took my fancy. And so since then, Miss Brent just thinks you are the canoodlers. Mr. and Mrs. Canoodlers.
I believe there's some tinned canoodle soup. I could check if you like.
We're going off. It has cold tongue.
I got my take on Miss Brent. We'll talk later.
Going off of what Noelle was saying, that was actually my next question. Does anybody have like a particular method that you employ when you act? I mean, because most of you have, you know, been doing it for a while, so do you have any...
Honestly, for me, different shows sort of call for different, I want to say, techniques in a way. You know, because a show that that one particular technique is going to be useful for, it might not be in another one. Like, there's one pretty famous technique that you would learn in college if you had classes that you had to actually learn things.
They have classes for this?
They do, right, where you have to buy books. This is the Stanislavski method, which is very about actions and intentions and motivations. But if you're playing a character who is more reactive than active, it's not always going to be the most useful technique. So I think for me it really depends on what kind of show it is. Or if you are doing something that is a much more physical role that is less character-driven, then something like Viewpoints might be interesting to sort of tap into. So for me, there's a lot of varied methods that sort of go into. You know, for this, I didn't really stick in particular to one method or another. I did a little bit of Stanislavski analysis for later parts of the show once, but so for me it changes a lot depending on what the show is and what my character is.
This is very strange to like, as because I was thinking about this before this episode, that it's very strange to talk about it, because if we were like in a movie promoting a movie, it's all done, like we've already done it all, but yeah, we're still like in the process, we haven't even gotten there yet, so you have to be even extra careful about what you say.
I'll have to bring us back afterwards, and we'll have a
postmortem.
Postmortem. Well, that's actually
an autopsy.
That's actually what we call it with the board and the. That's exactly what we do. As opposed to mortem.
Do you scrub up and put on the?
Oh, we pick everything apart.
I tend to like the word after action report, because postmortem sounds like such a failure, you know. So.
Like the show died.
Flat. I have tried to push a new method on many of you, which some of you have been okay with, and some of you not so much. Which. The Waylon's original, the way he does the tape technique with the color, you know, what color are you feeling, is not my cup of tea. However, no, that's really a part.
Also, I did some reading up on it. They also were not allowed to work on their text outside of rehearsals, including not working on lines outside of rehearsals.
Yep. Oh, it's true.
But they were professionals.
No.
Still, though.
Well, no.
It doesn't matter. Like, it's you are not allowed to touch or think about your text outside of rehearsal in this technique. And I'm like,
so here.
Maybe one show a year.
Let me explain it to you, because that's sort of it's terrifying until you do it. And some of our board members will listen to this because they loathe and despise this technique and think I have joined a cult because I used it. But it does. His whole concept is that it is unkind to the actor to draw from their personal experiences and their personal emotions. He refers to it as raping the actor. He's very he's
this doesn't make it sound
doesn't
any
like
culture,
it at all.
Just for the record. So
what he does is he has you go through it, and you read a section of the text in character, and then you listen to it back. That's thus called the tape technique, and then you act it out. And it is supposed to, and I think it works better for auditory learners, but it is supposed to ingrain those lines into you. And if you do it properly and become one with the method and the color of your emotions, then you don't need to touch the text outside of the rehearsals that way. I don't know, I've not done it that way, but it does tend to, with what I've seen and the show that I have been a part of that used it, the rate in which people learn their lines, particularly if they are auditory learners, is much quicker than other shows. So there must be some truth to it.
No, I can buy the theory you put forth about that it helps with the eye contact, you know, and the building of the cast. I totally get that. I totally buy into that. The only thing was about the auditory learners. I was trying to think how many students I've taught over the years. It has to be in excess of like 3,000 students, and I think I have had probably 8 that I can recall that were auditory learners. One who was hilarious because he was from Louisiana and never took a note. I thought he was going to flunk out my first test. He aced it, and that was genetics, you know, college level genetics. Didn't take the first note. He was an auditory learner, but most people aren't, and so that's why I would find it interesting that people could learn lines that way.
I actually found it made it harder for me. I had to do more work outside because I'm so not an auditory learner. Yeah. I need to have the actual literal physical thing in my hand. So I actually had to spend more time outside of rehearsal because I didn't get the advantage of those rehearsals with the book in my hand.
Ed, and I'm like your student. I never touch the book. I read it one time into my line learner app, and then I never look at it again. Yeah. Outside of rehearsals, because I can't learn from a book. It doesn't stay.
And you can see my book that's now in 4 pieces.
and I believe you, and you're the exception in my experience rather than the rule. But it did. It was nice though using that method once I got my hearing aids to work. to see people's faces instead of...
Well, and I did a very, very, very watered-down, modified version of it because it doesn't work for everyone. But I think that the benefit for me as an actor using it was the relationship side. Because when you're not... And you can't see my hands because I'm talking with my hands. When your face is not in a book, you can see the people around you and you can interact a little bit differently.
Yeah, and the big group scenes, especially. Mm-hmm. Like in the scenes where there was everyone on stage, it was a lot more useful to not have to be searching for your next line and just be able to interact with everyone else.
And it helps, I think, with perhaps not this show as much as other shows because with a murder mystery type show, you do have to be so precise with movements and who walks where and who walks by what and placement, where in other shows you can be a little bit more free with blocking. And I think the method that we used for this works really well with natural blocking.
I was going to ask everybody else, how did y'all like that method?
I would say it's my favorite method.
Of all new drugs.
Hands down.
Of all the none I've ever done.
And that is why you're my favorite.
I will say I don't...
I'm teasing.
I don't think I would have been able to put together the way I wanted to deliver the lines with the way I wanted to move around as quickly. Because hearing the way... Like, when you're just sitting and reading it, I feel like I'm reading it the way I want to. And if I'm moving around, maybe I'm not getting the inflections and things that I want. So having it play maybe affects the way I move.
Yeah.
Because I'm not also trying to remember the line and say the line and move the way I want to move all at the same time. So I think it came together faster. And I guess that would make me an auditory learner. And also back to the point of where you draw, you know, your motivations and things from. I probably would be drawing more internally if I had taken any theater classes, but
not
from the start,
not
maybe.
Necessarily.
Maybe,
I mean,
maybe
I know
not.
Plenty of people who, you know, are very experienced actors who went to school who still are very external. Mm. You know, they process from the outside in as opposed to from the inside out, but I have literally no visual memory. Like, I can't picture things in my head, so by necessity, I'm not pulling things from externally into my brain.
I guess I'm the opposite. I would be the opposite in this case then, because out of necessity, I don't have any training internally to draw from. And from the beginning, I've been saying, I'm just going to do what comes naturally, because I don't know any other way. It got me a callback and it got me a part, so I'm just going to keep doing that.
I think I'm sorry.
I guess that's the only place I'm going to draw from, things I've watched other people do.
I was going to say, I think also with a show like this where you're dealing, you know, we're dealing around 1940, I like when we do shows that aren't contemporary or translated that way to, you know, to get involved in researching a little bit of the era and the location. So in addition to working on character, there's that facet, especially with the character that Mia opted to cast Dr. Armstrong as a female, which in 1940 would have been very rare. So I think it changes the way I feel about her as a character because she is more of an odd female for that era, and I have to put myself in how would she think or how did she get there, And that tells you a little bit about what drives the character. So in addition to kind of working on the character, it's nice to look at even, you know, we were talking about props and clothing and what kind of glasses you would wear or what your manners would be like. I think that's a nice little adder to a show like this, is you learn quite a bit about the period or the locale. And I always enjoy that from a research standpoint. I think that's great, and trying to grow that along with the character.
Mm-hmm. I think Dr. Armstrong being a woman makes the character a lot more interesting. I think the character's a little two-dimensional as written,
mm-hmm.
but just mm-hmm. by having her be a woman, because, you know, that makes her such a unique woman for the period, and she clearly yeah. had mm-hmm. to have faced a lot of adversity to go to medical school, you know, mm-hmm. and all of that. I think it really adds a really interesting dimension to that character.
Well, it wasn't unheard of for women to go but to become a surgeon
mm-hmm.
and then to go from being a surgeon into a study of the nerves,
mm-hmm.
Just the transitions there. And you're right. I mean, as it's written, you can kind of think of, I don't want to give too much away, but almost as a weaker
mm-hmm.
Constitution. But then when you look at the aspect of she would have been going to medical school in the tens,
mm-hmm.
possibly the 20s, that really is quite a different story.
Mm-hmm.
There were a good number of women going to medical school in the 40s. But when she would have been going into the medical school, it would be a completely different
pre-war, right?
I would think so.
Yeah.
I would think so. I mean, it probably would have taken a lot longer to get through the school. I know there were some schools in England that I read
mm-hmm.
that were exclusively, you know, trying to bring more women into the medical field. They were very specific, and they were definitely out there. But it's nice to kind of imagine what that character would have gone through,
mm-hmm.
because that does really form a little bit more on the backside of what's going on, and then bringing it to this moment and to her current circumstances, which are very complicated. So that's been a nice little drive that is not built in necessarily when, mm-hmm. when a male is cast as written in the script. So it's been fun doing that. And, of course, clothing, costuming is always fun. Love that.
I like, too, that it's written for a man in that time, because then when you cast a woman in the role, it's not, it might have been written differently if it was meant for a woman in that time, because
yeah,
it would be rare. There would be references to the fact that this is a female doctor,
mm-hmm.
and things in the play might be different.
That's true.
Instead, it's just straightforward. It's the character.
It also
changes history, independent
of the
gender.
Having another woman around.
Yeah.
Which is kind of asked or expected to do things that,
right.
If the character were written as
yeah.
female, would never have been asked.
Yeah.
Right. No, yeah, it's good. It's good for the times we live in, you know,
yeah.
to have, you know, just, she's just a woman. That's it. Yeah.
Well, and we've changed some other dynamics in the show, relational
yeah.
dynamics between Jason's character, Rogers, and his female counterpart. You know, I will say that casting the show was one of the most difficult things that I've done, because there were so many incredibly talented people that auditioned, who I had to say no thank you to, which was super hard for me. And the way it was written, it was a husband and a wife, but the interactions between Jason and Karen were so amazing on stage and so much fun to watch, that I had to work out in my head how to cast them together. And so we went with a mother-son duo, which has really created,
oh, wow.
You know, we have to young Jason down a bit and old up Karen a little bit. And just we're going to get you some mascara. And
dark brown mascara.
Get the stash back.
But
we're going to get them some hair dye.
It's so much fun in how we get to change that, because a relationship between married people is very different between a mother and a son that have been working together for 15 years. And it's just, it's fun to watch.
It's been a lot of fun watching those scenes, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or at least I'd hope the relationship between mother and son is different than...
That is a very different show.
Yeah.
I
that is a very
Karen
different
to be in a rocking chair and a skeleton. You know.
No Oedipus syndrome here. No.
All right, Norman.
Yeah.
What was the question again?
It was, do you have any particular method?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think technique, right.
Yes, yes.
See squirrels at a rave.
Oh, yeah.
Every
yeah.
time.
Yeah, yeah. As far as the tape method goes, I'm the exact opposite of Jason in that it was interesting, but I think as a writer, I'm very much slavish to what's on the page, and so when they say sit, I go, okay. Yeah, okay, because it's there for a reason. Changing the roles and stuff like that—that's great. No, no, that's good. Well, that is true because there are some weird things in this script where
and let's be clear, most stage directions were not written by the writer. This play actually is a rarity because the stage directions were written by Agatha Christie.
Right.
Most stage directions come from how the first director directed it.
Hmm.
However, to be fair, these stage directions were written by Agatha Christie based on the particular production, not to exist in a vacuum. So
yes.
Some of the stage directions are written based on that particular set right. that clearly changed midway through the writing process.
Yes.
Some of the stage directions
That's
didn't
right.
quite catch up.
Yeah.
All
yeah.
of a sudden, there is a study.
Right? And a library.
But also, I mean, for me, as far as learning lines, I have to, you know, it has to be the book and just bam, 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 bam,
yeah.
bam. Okay, and then da-da-da-da-da, you know, so... yeah, I don't know if tape technique would have.
So clearly, you're right. all just telling me that I have tortured you.
In the biggest group, like in Act One, when everybody is in the room, it was very helpful early on to just not have to worry about when my next line was.
I liked it a lot because I'm pretty young and still like sort of working on all like getting all my techniques down. Like young as an actor, really.
Young as a human, too.
You're an embryo.
Get I don't want to sound like I was playing that card. But
I can mom you. It's all good.
But most of my work is physical, for the most part. I don't do a lot of motivation work. I just sort of take the character as, like, my impressions of them and put them into the situation and think about how they'd react to things. And I focus a lot more on physicality than, like, thinking about my character's history and whatnot. So it was nice to be able to begin, like, working physically at the beginning of the process as opposed to, like, I have to learn all my lines, and then I can start looking at other people. And then I can start, like, thinking about how I'd react to the environment. So, like, for my particular technique style, that worked out well.
That's why I like this. That right
I didn't have
there.
To start doing that halfway through the rehearsal period.
So, point for me.
Yay!
Now, there's something
Michael's
too.
About to give her another one. Let Michael talk.
Actually, I enjoyed Mia's take on the tape technique. I read the description of how Waylon did it, and I think it's crazy talk. But
true
but
that.
I love the version, the watered down version you've used, where it's less intrusive in the process, in my opinion, and more practical. I love that in the beginning. Doing the recording the lines and then go up on stage and just do what feels natural and work the blocking out that way. I hate being micromanaged by a director with, all right, on this line, move here. On this line, halfway through, sit down.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I'm not a puppet. I'd like to have something put what a character does.
I like so much better the I need you to be sitting by this word.
Yes.
That I can work with.
Exactly.
Because,
right.
But when it's I need you to sit on this word, and I'm like, but I don't want to sit on that word. Can I sit on three words earlier? No? Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that doesn't work for me.
Yeah. So I found it really freeing, again, to be able to look my fellow actors in the face and react to people and react to situations more organically without my face in the book. Think, what's my next line? When do I speak next? So that was really helpful. As an actor, my technique is actually kind of a mix between Jason and Noelle, which I used to consider myself a very technical actor. So very focused on how do I portray this? How do I make this work from an external perspective? Basically, how do I fool the audience into thinking that I'm doing something or feeling something? And with some of the emotional work underlying it, establishing the relationships with other characters, working with Noelle on the show has helped me actually bring that out a lot more, and it's been incredibly beneficial. So, but it's definitely, there's still that external aspect for me where, like, I had to figure out how does my character stand at rest?
Right.
Until I get that, it's hard to really feel at home on the stage.
Right.
But
I know
like
for
that.
Me, having no experience, going by the book at the beginning, I don't think I would have been able to dive in without doing that. Right. And reading through the whole thing before actually doing it is, okay, well, I will do that. I will do exactly that, and I will do exactly that. And, you know, it's you got to start somewhere. So for me, that would be the place where you kind of have to start and then tweak it based on, does it make sense? Do I feel impelled, compelled, repelled?
Oh, yay, you remembered its words.
To do things differently. And it's probably... but for Mia, it's probably refreshing to be directing adults where you can say, end up here and do what you feel is right to get there.
My directing experience up until this has been with teenagers. It's not been with and younger kids. And bless them, I love little kids that I get to give back to their parents. But directing them is really kind of painful. And high schoolers are really my people. But you guys, it was so much easier because it's not just your age, but a lot of that is your age and your life experience. And you can draw from things that I have to really kind of explain things to younger kids. So this works. This was much. It's been fantastic. And going back to Jason, what you were saying, one of the things that got you cast that I loved so much was when you were doing your cold readings of Rogers, your physicality and your facial expressions were just so dead on. And I don't know that you had enough time to really become one with the script because you were, but just the motions that you did and the physicality of your body and the way you did it, there was no one else to cast for that role, period. So go with it. It works for you.
That's the same thing I did in the bar plays play where that character was outlandish.
Oh, God.
While I was reading it, I'm like, this guy is...
I almost split a gut.
I'm like, this is like a Nathan Lane and Jack from Will and Grace and Robin Williams.
Oh, my God.
I thought you were going to say Jack from Three's Company.
And all the other directors were like... I was sort of like, well, I'm not even going to try to fight on that one. Like, take him.
Wow. But it didn't seem derivative, though. I mean, your performance did not seem derivative. So it was you. It wasn't
that
other people.
Probably was a part of my psyche.
It is. Last question, I guess. What are everybody's hopes for the show?
Get paid.
Let's have a talk about community theater.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah. Get ready to be disappointed.
I hope to not suck. it really comes down to that. No, I always kind of laugh at directors when they say, this is my baby. And I'm like, oh, God, get a grip. but it really sort of is. And you become so attached to the outcome. I am just so grateful that you guys auditioned because I don't have a fear that it's going to suck because you guys are so good and you work so hard and your ethic, to put out the best product, I really don't have to worry. Now it just comes down to me being able to be nitpicky with you guys and just push. So my hope is that you will that you'll have a great experience overall with our new little theater group and that you'll come back and that you'll tell people about a good experience and bring new people in, because for me, theater is all about community and connection with people. So that's what my hope is.
Don't tell her about the secret version we came up with last week that we're going to spring
it's
on
so
the first night of
it's
the show.
It's so entertaining.
She'll love it. Don't worry. Yeah.
There just needs to be a lot of vodka if you guys are
I hope there's like 20 little old biddies all sitting in the front row when I let lose my first F word.
Yeah, you know, the whole joke about you being in a bow tie and an apron and that's it is a joke. Just a joke.
No. For
my bow tie came in the mail yesterday.
What am I supposed to hope for now?
He burned his costume already. Sorry.
Hey, Rogers, there might be a little
something in for you. No, I have to pay a deposit on that.
We were told dressing was optional.
Yep.
My $3.99 bow tie came in the mail yesterday, but they couldn't deliver it because no one was home, so I didn't get it. Like, I don't leave it on the roof. It's $4.
Oh, and one thing I do want to add, which I think is super cool about this particular production and goes with my hope and community and all that, is we have been we've been invited to do this show for a local middle school because that is their one of their required readings, and. To me, that is so amazing. And for those of us that did start theater in high school, these are eighth graders that will be going to high school next year. And if we can spark one kid to fall in love with something like that, then we've done our job.
So to be clear, we're wearing pants for that performance.
Everybody wears clothes for that.
And we'll do the alternate version for the grade schoolers. This
they
is
won't
great.
Fall
they'll
in love
it.
With theater as much.
Yeah, but we won't go to jail, and I love that.
Dirty night.
I like that about us.
Anyone else?
I don't know.
Go ahead. You're giving right, me the I don't know if it's face. Yeah.
The canoodlers can't get themselves
together. I hope that I will learn to keep a straight face on some of the lines in this show.
Yeah. She's a dirty girl.
We've
Miss
been working
Agatha
quite
Christie.
Blue. You'd be surprised how many dirty jokes. We suggest a drinking game. Sneak in a flask when you come and see the show and just drink every time you see an actor trying not to break character because someone said something that could be construed as dirty. My favorite is talking about how you've never been in a tighter place than you are right now.
I think
look at everybody's face just freeze, you know. Wow. Oh, I'm so glad I don't have to say those.
Honestly, I don't know about what do I accomplish with the show? I mean, I'm loving this production. I'm loving this performance. I'm really proud of the work we're all doing. And for me, this... When I went to Los Angeles, Lombard's the kind of character I wanted to play in films. So I'm finally getting to do a little bit of what I would dreamt of when I was younger. So I'm having a blast. And I just... My hope is that I do a good job and keep the audience entertained.
Well, you're doing a good job. Thank Everybody you. Is. This is easily the most talented cast I've ever worked with. I mean, easily. It's been a hell of a lot of fun.
Well, I think that's my hope is that I hope that, you know, I could see how we are changing and evolving and rethinking certain things. I hope that the audience can sense the, you know, kind of, I mean, use the word chemistry when she was casting the show, that she was looking for the right chemistry of people, and this is one show I've been in where I know that every single actor and actress wants to be here and wants to pull something out of even the smallest of scene or gestures, whereas you always have one or two people you're like, what are they doing? But I feel like this cast, I hope the audience notices.
No, don't. They were making gestures.
I'm trying to say something.
No, it's beautiful. Continue.
The jokes are just flying through my head.
Oh my god. I'm thinking of the Agatha Christie quote about her having a little child's heart in a jar on her desk.
Stephen King said that too.
Pulling my heart out of
that's
her.
Why, like,
I think Agatha would be in full support of turning every joke possible into
there
a dirty one.
Yeah.
No, you're...
Well, it's been a fun process, and I think it's going to show when we open the show. Did I say something off color there? I'm going to make sure nothing entendre happens here.
Open
so.
And show, you said.
So. You know, if we're going to have an entendre list. Make
I am sure if I keep talking. Yep.
What I hope for the show is I want to leave everybody wanting more.
Ooh.
I want the audience wanting more. Although they're going to get plenty in the end.
Oh.
There's a little teaser, you know. but I know I'm going to want more. I already want more.
I want to work with this cast more. I wanted this to not end. I'm just probably going to randomly show up here, continuing through February.
Yay! Yeah. Go to the Crabtree Mall.
But I also
kill somebody.
I'm really hoping.
No, don't do that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's wrong.
I'd love it if StageWorks like wanted more, you know, and like I don't know. I just hope everybody leave them wanting more. So
I'm just, oh gosh. The thing that comes to mind for me is just something that I keep getting told at rehearsals is just have fun with it. Murder mysteries are actually a really fun genre. If you think about a lot of things that people write, some of them are like passion projects, and you have comedy. I don't know exactly where I'm going with this, but murder mysteries are a really fun genre because that's always seems to be the point, is just to enjoy the material and just to enjoy doing them. You can write just a ton of them because it's just an inherently fun way to set up a plot and to just structure a story. Like that's why they're still running on WUNC all the like every year, is because they're just inherently fun. So I'm hoping to have a little bit of that and share a little bit of that with the audience.
It's fun to kill people on stage.
Yes.
It's fun to die on stage.
Yes. Yes. I don't know what you're talking about.
Wait, there's deaths in this play?
No, that's the mystery. Maybe.
We don't know.
Is someone going to die eventually?
Our version was a little different.
Murder question mark mystery? I'm with Laura. I want to take you all everywhere if I go to do any other parts. I wouldn't even know what to do with anyone else. But I also am with Laura where I want to see more of, like, I think every character could have a spin-off play or a biography or something.
Lauren Armstrong.
The super cheers.
I want to hear more of that. Davis.
Oh,
Lauren
Armstrong.
Who's Davis?
Yeah,
who's that?
No,
I was saying Mrs. Rogers.
I don't know what you mean.
Lore.
Oh, there's a side story there.
There was a photo. There were a couple photos.
Rogers, I am your father.
With my mother.
Well, thank you all for joining me to.
Thank you.
Blab about yourselves, God, actors, right?
And so hard.
And the show. And anything you want to add, Chief? Before we
dates,
yeah.
Well,
are
we doing this?
Well, our dear Doug is going to give us all that information. I think with the
we're going to splice in a shall we call it an outtake?
Yes, or an advertisement.
An advertisement,
whatever. But. You know, it's going to be a great show, and it will suck for you if you don't come see it. So you need to get on the stick and buy your tickets, because the last two shows we've done have come really close to selling out a couple weeks out. So if you want to come, then buy your tickets. And I will also say that we are almost the cheapest theater in the Triangle, and you can get 3/4 subscriptions, season memberships, for $30. So you can come see our show. The tickets are $14 for adults, or you can spend $30 and get VIP seating and this show plus the next two for $30. So, yep, I'm a board member too. So come on down. It really is a deal. For this quality show, easily we could charge a lot more. So,
and VIP seating puts you in the splash zone for the play. So,
yeah.
Yes.
The question is, what are we splashing?
Don't tell.
Promise it. Watch it out, though.
Just bring. We haven't revealed the Gallaghers in
just
this show.
Plastic.
And the black light.
Yeah.
And that'll do it for this episode of the Hodgepodge Podcast.
We've been canceled.
I'd like to thank everybody for joining me, and thanks for listening, everybody.
Adapted from the best-selling mystery novel of all time, Agatha Christie's And Then There Were None is the story of 10 strangers, each with something to hide and something to fear, invited to an isolated island mansion by a host who fails to appear. The strangers are cut off from everything but each other and the inescapable shadows of their wicked pasts. One by one, the guests share their darkest secrets, and one by one, they die. Which among them is the killer, and will any of them survive?
Agatha Christie's And Then There Were None, running Thursday, January 25th, through Saturday, January 27th. Tickets are available at the Holly Springs Cultural Center box office and on eTix.